Welcome to Crime Beat on the Artists First World Radio Network. Crime Beat, discussing the issues and controversies of the criminal world with famous personalities. Your hosts, Ron Chepsik and Will Reb, will guide you into the deep underbelly of the criminal mind. To learn more about your hosts, their books, and past shows, visit the Crime Beat archive page. And now, your hosts, Ron and Will.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Will Harib, your co-host and producer of Crime Beat. This hour-long broadcast puts you, the listener, into the back alleys and boardrooms of the world's most fascinating subject, crime. Our guests will allow you to experience their lives, and this is exactly where you want to be on Thursday night. And it's right here on Crime Beat, brought to you by the Artists First World Radio Network. Tonight we're broadcasting live from our studios in Thunder Bay, Canada, and Rock Hill, South Carolina. Tonight we have Linda Scarpa, daughter of the notorious and deadly mobster Greg Scarpa, and Malcolm Kushner, author of the hilarious book titled Official Book on Mob Humor. More about them later in our show. Well, now, Ronnie, I'd like to introduce you, you're the indefatigable Mr. Ronnie Chepsik. You know, Ronnie's an award-winning author, documentary producer and director, publisher. He's a two-time Fulbright scholar to Bangladesh and Indonesia, and a consultant to the History Channel's Gangland TV series. His book, Sergeant Smack, has been optioned for a movie. His latest project is just released documentary, The Frank Matthews Story, The Rise and Disappearance of America's Biggest Kingpin. For more information, please go to Strategic Media Books. That's www.strategicmediabooks.com. Given his books, his extensive travels, and in-depth interviews, Ron Chepsik today is the leading expert on the fascinating world of crime. Get out there and buy his books, and be sure to check out his documentary DVDs. You won't be disappointed. You can also join him on Facebook and Twitter. Now, here's Ronnie.
Thank you, Willie. And here's a little bio on my co-host, Willie Reb. Willie is a freelance writer and broadcast journalist from Thunder Bay, Canada, who has assisted me on some of my crime books. Willie is currently involved in the international shipping business, where he's a contributing writer to several trade publications. Last year, he published Movers and Mavericks, an anthology about influential people from the Thunder Bay area. And this summer, he will publish a book about the famous Ganalda shipwreck that sank 100 years ago in Rossport on Lake Superior. Willie?
Well, thanks for that, Ronnie boy. Our book, Movers and Mavericks, is selling like hot buttered popcorn at your favorite movie house. Thank you very much. Well, Ronnie, Crime Beat's featured guests tonight are Malcolm Kushner, author of the definitive book on mob humor, aptly titled The Official Book on Mob Humor, and Linda Scarpa, daughter of gangster Greg Scarpa. We're going to do some very serious insights into the deadly world of the mob with Linda Scarpa, and on the lighter side of mob life through Malcolm Kushner's hilarious book. It's going to be a great show, so stay tuned. You won't want to miss this one, that's for sure. Now, just before we reach into our mailbag, Ronnie, you know what? I'd like to thank all our listeners out there from around the world, that's around the globe, for listening to Crime Beat. You know, there's no turning back the clock now. We're thrilled and delighted to announce we've had overwhelming positive comments and thumbs up about our program. We're averaging over 130,000 listeners every week now, and it's certainly something to cheer about. I'd like to thank all our production people at Artists First World Radio Network, in particular Corey, Scott, and Tony, for making the show possible. Like I said many times, Ronnie boy, internet radio is the place to be. It's great to be recognized, and I guess it proves we're right on track. Well, you know what, Ronnie, this week's mailbag, we're going to give you just a couple from our fans out there. This one is from Maxine of Copenhagen, Denmark, who writes, "What's with all the attention on Frank Matthews? Two programs on probably a dead-as-doornails ex-dope dealer. With all the lives he's destroyed when he was selling heroin, this gangster deserves to be burning in hell, just like the rest of the purveyors of drug addiction." Pretty strong words, Ronnie. I'll ask for your comments after we read the other one. Now, the next one is from Christopher of the U.S. Virgin Islands. He writes, "Just got around to listening to your broadcast with Noam Chomsky. He was quite illuminating to say the least, his description about the Russian submarine commander who nearly started World War III during the Cuban Missile Crisis was particularly intriguing. Keep up the great interviews. Really enjoyed your show." Well, Ronnie, any comments?
Yeah, Noam Chomsky is a superstar, and Maxine doesn't have any imagination. I hope that's not the I hope that's not the case for everybody in Denmark. What could be more fascinating than Frank Matthews' story?
Yeah.
End of that. Okay.
Yeah, you bet. Well, you know, we thank him for his letter anyway. Now here's just one more, Ronnie. This one is from Ronald Porachuk from Thunder Bay, Canada. He writes, "Ron, what a great show last week. I sure enjoyed it a lot. And the ex-law enforcement guests were number one. Ron and Willie, keep up the good work. Thursday night belongs to you two great guys. Hey, Ronnie, we have some fans right up in your hometown, Ron."
Hey, that's great. And I don't know this Ronald Porachuk, but we'll get to meet him next time we're up, right, Willie?
Absolutely. We'll buy him a beer for that.
Right, right.
Now, well, Ronnie boy, you want to give our listeners out there in that wide expanse of cyberspace a preview of next week's show, please?
Yes. Next week we have Pat O'Connor, the author of Scapegoat, a book about a prominent death penalty case in California, which is really interesting, so we'll examine the death penalty case. And then the other book is Rogue Mobster, The Untold Story of Mark Silverman and the New England Mafia by Scott Deitch and Mark Silverman. And that's a really interesting story. It's another side of the Boston mob, which is in the news now with Whitey Bulger. Willie?
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to that one. Well, Ronnie, as you know, the beat to crime never stops. It never, never stops. Every week, just to get you in the mood, we present our rap sheet part of the program. Our rap sheet features a potpourri of news and events from the world of crime. Now, here is this week's rap sheet item. Dateline, May 6, 2012, Nashville, Tennessee. 14-year-old suspected in nearly 100 Tennessee burglaries. Hey, Ronnie, police expect the burglary rate to go down in North Nashville because of the arrest of just one person, a 14-year-old boy. Hey, what's up with this?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this kid, the cops are saying that he was really creative. He drove away a go-kart as a getaway vehicle. But, you know, I mean, this guy left his fingerprints at the scene, so I think his career in a mob, if he goes that way, will probably end up as a getaway driver.
I think so. Or he's got a good career
NASCAR.
For a heist
or something, right, on that end. But, you know, the cops are whining about this poor kid. You know, he lost both parents and needed someone to look up to. I mean, how many kids does that describe, right, out there that never end up robberies? But, you know, this kid was robbing all kinds of stuff. He got caught several times. They let him go. But maybe some tough love in a state reformatory will shape him up, right?
Yeah, well, a good old-fashioned reform school will shape him up, like you said. So we hope he survives this one and he leads a productive life.
Right.
Now, just before we get on with our first featured guest, Malcolm Kushner, we'll take a brief station identification. This is Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network. Wherever you are tonight, we hope you enjoy our show this evening. Your hosts are Ron Chepsik and yours truly, Will Harib. You can listen to our broadcast weekly on the Internet Band on Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m., Eastern Standard Time. If you have a question for our guest, email us at crimebeat123@yahoo.com. We'll be glad to hear from you, and we'll try to incorporate your ideas into our future program. Well, Ronnie, Crime Beat's first guest tonight is Malcolm Kushner, author of the official book of mob humor. We'll start off the show with a few laughs for a change. It's going to be a great show, so stick around. You won't want to miss this one. Take it away, Ronnie.
Thank you, Willie, and welcome to the show, Malcolm Kushner.
Oh, thank you, Ronnie.
I love your inscription, Ron. Keep laughing or else. Yeah, you didn't. It was a great book. I laughed really hard, but you haven't been laughing too much lately, right? I think you're about ready to star in a movie called The Departed.
Yeah, really. I was out in California to help my son move from one city to another, and like the day after I got here, some jerk ran a red light and totaled the car. I was in the past seat. I got airlifted to Stanford Hospital. The story in the local paper said I was expected to survive. So.
Oh, boy.
Were they betting in Las Vegas on it? You got a lot of friends there.
I don't know. The publisher of the official book of mob humor thinks somebody put a hit out on me. But yeah. Well, my son's been doing all this investigation because I don't even remember what happened.
Right.
He knows who it was. He said, you know what? I don't want to know their name because now that I got new friends, like Henry Hill did the forward to my book, and Frank Culotta gave me a blurb, and
Lou Ferrante, who's been on our show, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going like, hey, you know what? I find out who this guy is. Yeah. I don't want to know because he's dead. You know, it's kind of like I learned that. I think John Gotti did it the right way when his neighbor accidentally ran his kid over, and then the neighbor disappeared a few years later. So, a lot of people think acid had something to do with it, but nobody's been able to prove anything.
Right. Well, I'm glad you're in good spirits, and humor probably helped you do that. I mean, how do you get away with calling your book official? You're like some kind of pope, you know, which decides what's funny or not funny as far as the mafia is concerned. Why do you call it official?
Actually, the publisher wanted that, but, you know, I have a long history of, like, self-proclaiming my greatness. I've been a humor consultant for 30 years, and the title I use is, America's Favorite Humor Consultant. I figured, you can't argue with that. You know, right. Larry King was America's favorite talk show host.
That's right.
Hey, this is great. There's no way to, like, measure right. that objective.
Right. Yeah, they described you as an international humor consultant. That's about the strangest title ever thing. And you end up, you make your money, evidently, training thousands of managers, executives, professionals, to give them a competitive edge with humor. Can you really teach these dudes, you know, in big business to be funny?
Well, I'm not teaching them to be funny. It's, you know, you're a big-time personality. You're talking to groups of people.
Right.
You know, you're making presentations. Okay. How do you show that you have a sense of humor? And, you know, how do you work some jokes in? Or if you can't tell jokes,
right.
which is what most of you say, you know, here's simple techniques that anyone can use. And that's what I do, and anyone can use it, because I have clips of the presidents, Kennedy through Obama.
Right.
And, you know, we know Reagan and Kennedy. They're in their own dimension. Nobody's Reagan or Kennedy.
Right.
But, you know, once you see Bush, Ford, and Nixon, and Carter use humor successfully, most people say, oh, man, I can do that.
I could do that. Well, you know, your book kept both of us laughing, and we'll start off. You read a couple of your jokes.
Yeah.
Willie, how many mobsters does it take to change a light bulb?
Well, how many does it take, Ronnie?
Well, how many times have you heard that joke? Here's a new twist. Three: one to screw it in, one to watch, and one to shoot the witness. And there's another one. Business is booming. A man walks up to a hitman and asks, "How are you doing?" The hitman says, "Not so good. Business is murder." The next day, the man walks up to the hitman and asks the same question. The hitman says, "I'm doing great. I made a killing yesterday." How about you, Willie?
Well, you know, Ronnie, I'm going to give the audience just a couple of samples that I really enjoyed of mob humor Malcolm Kushner had written about. This one is on mob wisdom from the movies. Remember the movie Get Shorty, Ronnie?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this character, Harry Zim.
That's John Travolta, right?
That's right, yeah. This character
in
the movie says, "I once asked this literary agent, what kind of writing paid the best?" He said, "Ransom notes." Now, that's funny, I'm telling you, and very true, very true. Well, there's another one here. Just one more before I hand it back to you, just to get you in the mood here. Malcolm Kushner calls this one Good News, Bad News. Now, a mafia guy comes home from work in a pretty good mood. "How was work, honey?" his wife asks. The mobster looks at her and says, "I've got some good news and I've got some bad news." "Well," pondered his wife, "I guess I'll take the good news first." "Okay, get this," he boasts. "The boss gave me an important new job and he's paying me $50,000. I start tomorrow." "That's fantastic, honey. Did you tell your best friend Vinny yet?" she said excitedly. "I said there was bad news too, baby," he frowned. "Vinny's dead." "Oh, my God," she shrieks. "Vinny was the best. He gave our kids presents every Christmas. You know, when did he pass away?" The mafioso looked down and shook his head. "Tomorrow." Well, you know, I'll tell you, that's funny. That's pretty funny.
I want to tell you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, it's not just a joke book. I mean, I got jokes all through it, but I did a lot of research for a couple of years.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you, Malcolm. Are these jokes like mafia tell themselves, or, I mean, gangsters tell themselves, or are they jokes you sort of thought up, you know, knowing what you know about the mafia life?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know if they tell them, although Henry Hill said he was laughing through the whole thing.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that I did a lot of research for the book, so a lot of the stuff in it isn't jokes. It's like actual news stories that I think are hilarious. Like, you know, you can't make this up. I think my favorite one in the book is these two hitmen were driving through Brooklyn. They were looking for this guy. He was just killed. They saw him on the sidewalk. They both shot at him, but the car swerved and they hit each other. And then one guy was paralyzed for life. And the guy that they were trying to shoot, who they missed, sent this guy a Christmas card with a battery in it every year, like keep on rolling. And the battery was for his electric wheelchair. I mean, you can't make up stuff like that. I don't know why they call them wise guys.
Right. Funny guys maybe, right? But, I mean, how did you research this book? I mean, how do you research a humor book?
Oh, well, I'm an old-time geek. I have here's my sales pitch. Buy the book or I'll go back to practicing law. I've been a humor consultant for 30 years, but before that I was a lawyer for a few years. So
I'm
good at research. You know, that's what I say. You know, whether or not you think the world needs a humor consultant, I'm sure you'll agree we can use one less attorney.
One less lawyer, right. That's right.
But, yeah, you know, on the web and the library, just did a lot of, you know, archives of newspapers and this. They just do funny stuff. It's unbelievable.
Right. Well, the mob, I mean, the gangsters, you hang out in Las Vegas, right? And you know a lot of these guys. You mentioned Henry Hill. We had Lou Ferrante on our show. He gave you a blurb and all that.
Yeah, nice guy.
These guys got a, you know, sense of humor, like they can laugh at themselves and, you know, because a lot, you know, there's a lot of truth in humor. I mean, you know, some of these things are very true, like Willie's talking about the ransom note and all that.
Yeah.
What kind of reactions you get?
I thought they were hilarious. I mean, Lou Ferrante, his blurb on my book, I think, is hysterical. He goes, when the judge threw the book at me, I wish it had been the official book of mob humor. Come on, that's funny.
You can't beat that for a blurb, right?
But a lot of these guys, Henry Hill and all the people with him, I've been interacting with them through email and over the phone, but on February 14th at the opening of the Mob Museum in Vegas, we were all there in this big tent selling our stuff, and you know, I finally got to meet him. Then we all hung out in the bar for a few hours, and afterwards, Henry's girlfriend said, the guys like you. Now you're part of the crew now. You know, Frank Culotta was there.
Right, right. He was on our show,
Montana.
Too. Our favorite hitman.
These guys are hilarious.
Right. So they make a lot of jokes when they're
among
themselves, and you know, they laugh it up.
Absolutely.
Who do you think is the funniest Godfather of all time? When you did some research, who struck you? I don't. You know, I look at the pictures of Al Capone and Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky. They don't strike me as being funny type guys. You know,
I'm thinking in terms of lines, I think Gotti was probably funny.
Oh, Gotti was Gotti. Well, you have a one section there, right?
Yeah, he just would would toss off funny lines unbelievable.
Why don't you read a couple from the book, from that Gotti section?
Oh, yeah. I remember right off the top of my head, he says, where was that one? Oh, yeah, well, FBI stands for Forever Bothering Italians. I love this one, too. This is like classic Gotti. I know where my mistakes are, where I made my mistakes. They're too late to remedy, you know what I mean?
Well, you got some really great chapters. You have chapters on mobsters in heaven. You have another chapter, What a Way to Get the Boot, Corpse Found in Long Island, Mob Dig. You know, there's some of the really funny headlines.
You know, in New York, I think the New York Post and the New York Daily News compete with each other. If there's any kind of mob-related story, they look for the pun and they like try and outdo each other. Unbelievable.
Right. So that was pretty easy to do, right? All you do is go back and look at some of the headlines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On that, then, what about some of the other jokes that you thought were quite interesting that sort of struck you as being really funny when you were researching the book? Anything that sticks out?
Well, I remember there were some. I forget, this had a funny headline, too, because it was like the Daily News or the New York Post, but there were these Viagra Vendetta or something like that. There were like a bunch of doctors in Westchester, New York,
right,
who were supplying the mob with Viagra. And they and in the trial, they considered themselves to be consigliaries to the family because they thought they were at that level because they gave them unlimited Viagra.
Right.
You can't make up this stuff.
Right, on that. Well, you had, one of the things I found really interesting was you had a whole section on mafia movies, right?
And,
and you know, I was amazed because I consider myself a mafia buster, how many movies I missed. And I don't know if Blockbuster's got them or I get them off the Internet, but I'm going to start researching some of these movies.
I did a lot of research for that because, you know, there's endless list of movies by theme on the web, and I looked all over the web, and I couldn't find a single list for, like, mob-related comedies.
Right.
So as far as I know, I'm the first one to put it together, and it's like, you know, there's over 100. And,
right.
You know, if you define it broadly, I mean, people, everybody knows Analyze This, Analyze
That. Yeah, Analyze That, right.
This one goes, you know, going back to the 30s. I mean, Edward G. Robinson did a couple of movies where he just, you know, makes
fun funny?
Of himself. Well, he did a couple of comedies where he's, like, basically parodying his role as a gangster, which are pretty funny.
Right. Well, I always thought Jimmy Cagney was funny. You know, Come and Get Me, You Dirty Rat.
Oh,
know,
yeah.
And, you know, and standing on top of the, you know, on top of the world, Ma, and all that. What's your favorite comedy? Don't say Analyze This and Analyze That.
No, I'm saying, I think I like the one that goes back a ways that people have kind of forgotten about now. Remember the, what was the one with, where Marlon Brando parodied his role of the Godfather, the movie he made with Matthew Broderick.
Oh, yeah, right.
The I think it was like 1980 or something.
Right.
That was really big at the time, and everyone knew it. You know, like, nobody remembers it now.
Right. But, like, you know, people will buy this book because of the humor, you know, because you can pick it up anywhere and just, you know, at bed, you know, if you're uptight, you can read it and relax, go to bed and all that. But I think these lists you have on the movies is really good. I think that that'll be really useful for a lot of people.
I want people instead of just reading the jokes and they go, great, you know, this
right.
way they keep it on their shelf for, like, the news stories
right.
that are real, the
right.
The movie list. So, right. you know, so it's like a reference book.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you know, Malcolm, you've got a section here, or you got a part in here that shows mobster pickup lines. These are hilarious.
Oh.
I'm telling you. Like, I'm going to read a couple of these. mobster looks, he says, are you free tonight or will it cost me? That's pretty funny. Or another one. He looks at it and goes, he says, you're reminding me of my dead ex-girlfriend. Interested in serving hard time? That's a gun in my pocket, and I'm happy to see you. I mean,
right.
those types of things. Hey.
Yeah, here's another one. What are the three words mobsters hate to hear when having sex? Honey, I'm home.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Right. On that, then. What about an encore? Are you going to do another book on this subject?
Well, that's up to the publisher. And honestly, I have to see if I live. You know, I have all this fractured stuff, and then on top of that, I'm in a rehab facility in California, and
right.
I got pneumonia, so it's like, I don't know, I'm still wondering if I'm going to come out of here alive or not.
Right. Well, if you live, I mean, a lot of our listeners go to Las Vegas, right? They could catch you there, right? You hang around that museum. Which is
oh, yeah, actually, I'm proud to say that the publisher did tell me that the book is selling really well in the gift shop in the museum. So.
Right, the Mom Museum.
And also, it's a great, Mother's Day's coming up. It's only $9.99, because I fought with the publisher. I said, keep the price under $10.
Right,
finally,
right.
$9.95, it's like a no-brainer gift. You pay more for a drink at a bar.
Right, wow. Right, and that. People can get the book, the official book of Mob Humor, Malcolm Kushner, pretty well anywhere, right? You could get
it
on Amazon, you get it on Barnes & Noble, you go to your
yeah.
bookstore. But you don't have a website, do you?
Actually, I have a... See what you think. I did like a cheap and dirty book trailer for it. If you go on YouTube and type in Mob Humor, the book trailer for the official book of Mob Humor usually comes up first. Check it out and see what you think.
Okay. Well, we're going to get you back on with Henry Hill. You're buddies with Henry Hill. That'd be a great combination. We'd have a Willie and
hilarious.
I and you and Henry. We had a great time with him when he was
Absolutely.
On the show. So
he's great. You don't even have to say anything. You
I know. He's really great on that. But we really appreciate having you on the show, Malcolm. And like I said, we'll have you back on again. And good luck with your recuperation.
Oh,
and
thank
don't
you.
Take any hits out on that guy, right? Like
yeah.
like your friend John Gotti did,
yeah.
or allegedly did.
Yeah, get well soon, Malcolm. We wish you well.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Willie?
Yeah, well, you know what, Ronnie? Special thank you to Malcolm Kushner, author of the official book of Mob Humor.
Right. And we'll
now, before we get to our second guest this evening, Linda Scarpa, we'll take a brief station identification. You're listening to Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and Will Rib. Well, Ronnie, our second guest this evening is Linda Scarpa, daughter of
And
Craig
we're
going
to go into a music break, Willie.
You bet.
And Corey?
Can I hang up?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crime Beat executive producer Ron Chepsik is not only a co-host of the show, he's also a crime writer and a publisher of other talented writers as well. Go to the publisher's website at strategicmediabooks.com to check these popular books out. Ron's books include the award-winning Sergeant Smack, The Lives and Times of Ike Atkinson, Kingpin and His Band of Brothers, which has been optioned for a movie, Queenpins, the first book exclusively about women gangsters, The Traficantes, Godfathers from Tampa, Florida, The Mafia, The CIA, and The JFK Assassination. You can also buy books by such noted true crime authors such as Pat O'Connor, author of Scapegoat, Scott Deitch, author of Rogue Mobster, Scott Wilson, author of Straight from the Hood, and Seth Ferranti, author of Prison Stories. Keep up with the new books coming out by joining the company's hot new mailing list. To get on it, email strategicmediabooks@gmail.com. That's STRATEGIC, mediabooks@gmail.com. The books from Strategic Media Books are also available at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and through your favorite bookstore. When you go to Strategic Media Books' website, mention that you caught the buzz from the Crime Beat Radio Show and you will get $3 off any purchase. Again, the website is StrategicMediaBooks.com, STRATEGIC, MediaBooks.com. Come on down and you won't be disappointed. Now back to Crime Beat with your hosts, Ron and Will.
Thanks, Corey. Well, Ronnie, our second guest this evening is Linda Scarpa, daughter of Greg Scarpa, the deadly mobster known as the Grim Reaper. Linda will talk about her infamous father, Greg Scarpa. Greg Scarpa was no ordinary mob guy. He earned the moniker the Grim Reaper because he preferred to do the killing himself instead of jobbing out his task to hitmen. He was widely considered the most brutal member of New York's most violent, dysfunctional mob family, the man at the center of Colombo War of the early 1990s. So stick around. You won't want to miss this one with Linda. Take it away, Ronnie.
Thank you, Willie, and welcome to the show, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you doing? First of all, we were calling you Linda Shiro, and you've changed your name back to Scarpa. Is there any particular reason why you did that?
Well, there's a long story behind that, but I was actually born Shiro, and legitimately I am a Scarpa. So, you know, a lot of the details about that and my life as far as me not finding out my father was Greg until I was older,
right.
You know, is in my book that I'm doing right now. But I was actually born a Shiro because my mother and father were both with different people the time that I was conceived.
Wow, that's really complicated.
Yeah.
Especially for a young kid. When did you find out that your father was Greg Scarpa?
Well, I was told when I was a teenager, but you know, I didn't grasp the whole thing. I didn't really understand fully until I was really in my 20s.
Right.
I guess I really just didn't want to believe that this could be my life because
right.
It was so confusing for me, really growing up this way. You know, I grew up thinking that I had a father, but Greg really was a father figure to me. He was really my father. He was there for me my whole life.
Right.
So that was confusing for me in itself because he acted as my father. So when I was told as a teenager, you know, it took me a little time to really fully understand that.
Right.
You know, and plus the person that I was told at a younger age was my father, I loved also. So it was hurtful for
right.
that person. You know, it was
right.
hurtful all around for everyone.
Well, how was, you know, your father has this really fearsome reputation, you know, the Grim Reaper and all that. But how was he as a father?
Well, as a father, you know, when we were young, he was great. I mean, he did a lot of things with us. He was a family man. He was always there, you know, for everything. I mean, stood home for dinner every night. He didn't leave the house till 11 o'clock. His hours were, he made his own hours, you know, 11
right.
to 5. But, you know, he had strict rules. We had to be home for dinner
right.
every night at the same time. You know, he was a family man.
Right. So he led two lives. He was a mobster in one life, but then a family man on the other.
Yeah, he actually led more than two lives, I think.
How many lives did he leave?
I think he led a few more. He was a mobster. He was an FBI informant.
Right.
He was a father.
Right.
He was a father to another family. He led a lot of lives.
Right. But in one Newsweek article, you told that anyone you had a minor disagreement would disappear, end up beaten. Was that true, or is that just hyperbole by the Newsweek reporter?
Well, my father was very, very protective, and if somebody did something that he did not if somebody did something that he did not like,
mm-hmm.
they were going to pay a consequence. And unfortunately, there was a few people that paid a heavy price for either doing the wrong thing, hanging out with me, or you know, so yeah, there was some beatings that were given and some bad ones.
Right. So you had to watch yourself, right, with people, because you could easily get them in trouble if you thought that you were, you know, wronged by somebody.
Well, you know, I was a kid, so I was just being a kid, and
right.
I didn't realize that was the consequence until after it happened, and that was very upsetting for me also, because you know, that wasn't happening to my friends.
Right.
You know, if they got in trouble, they got punished.
Right.
Yeah,
you
Linda,
know?
you mentioned that your father wanted you guys to follow the rules. When you guys sort of strayed off the track, how was he as a disciplinarian?
Well, he was pretty strict when we were young. You know, he just wanted us to do what he wanted us to do, and you know, he was pretty set on that. I mean, as far as, you know, punishing us, he would try, but he always kind of caved, you know.
You never laid a hand on you guys at all?
No, never.
I see.
Right.
Never.
Life was pretty good for you, I understand. The way it sounds, when from my back, like, you haven't got a book yet, so you don't have a, you know, life story, which I read, but I was trying to pierce your life story together from various articles that I've written. Until the early 90s, right, with the Colombo Wars, and that sort of changed everything.
Yeah, everything changed when, number one, when he got infected with HIV, and number two, when they put the hit on him in front of me and my son.
Right. Well, first of all, talk about the hit that he put on you and your son.
No, there was a hit put on my father, and it was in front of me and my son.
Oh, right, excuse me, in front of Grace Scarpa, and you were there. Describe what happened on that, and that had a tremendous impact on your father, because he went after some of these guys, right?
Yeah, he went wild. I mean, that day was a day out of the ordinary, because I never left at the same time as him, and that day I happened to have left at the same time as him.
Oh, so you weren't supposed to be there. They were probably just putting a hit on your father, right?
Exactly. And what happened was I cut off a van that was speeding up the block, and when the block was cut off by a big truck, and me and my father's car were kind of sandwiched into, we were wedged into a huge truck and a van. All these guys jumped out of the van and started shooting at my father's car, and bullets were spraying everywhere. Shots sprayed into my car. No one in my father's car, amazingly, got hit. That car got away, but my father started to freak out on the driver, because he wanted him to come back, and the guy didn't want to drive back, so my father got out and walked back home, because he knew that I was left in the street in
right.
my car. So when I was in the house, I didn't know if he was dead or alive. So when he walked through the door, he basically went from father to the devil because
right.
You
could
know,
you see that change in his demeanor, like looking at him? Did he, you know, become
yeah?
Guy,
no,
all
I
that?
Seen it. I seen it as soon as he saw that we were okay. That was it. It was he was no longer the person that I knew anymore.
Right, but it didn't stop there because you're very, very tragically your brother too, right? Joey, was shot in the eye in one horrible incident, and later.
No, my father was shot in the eye.
Okay.
My father was shot in the eye, and my brother was murdered
right.
10 months after my father passed away.
Oh wow! And were you close to your brother?
Yeah, that was my little brother. I mean, he was 2 years younger than me, and that's like the worst thing that I've ever felt, the worst pain I've ever felt in my life, really.
Wow. How did your father take that?
Well, no, my father was already passed. So.
Oh, this was after. This was after 92.
Right.
Okay.
What happened was my father, what happened was the war happened, and my father went out on a killing spree. He was set on getting everybody involved that he possibly could get. And he had, my brother had gotten into an altercation with some guys from the neighborhood and told my father about it. My father went ballistic because they pulled a gun on my brother. And my father was on an ankle bracelet at the time, and he didn't care about the ankle bracelet. He went out, and he went out with my brother and a friend of his.
Wow.
And he went to these people, and he shot this kid in his stomach. And his friend started shooting at my father, and that's when my father got his eye shot. And my brother's best friend got killed in the car. He died 2 days later, actually. He was shot in the head.
Wow. This is why you have to do a... autobiography. I'm going to wait to read it to get all the facts straight.
Yeah, no, I'm working on it.
Well, it's
exactly.
Going to be. I mean, the listeners can get a sense of how compelling your story is going to be.
I'm working on that. My proposal is out right now,
right.
So I'm just waiting to hear.
Right, and if that wasn't enough, your father also contracted AIDS. Right, that must have been devastating to your family.
Yeah, well, that was when. AIDS wasn't really, people didn't really have a lot of knowledge about it. So my father, he didn't know really how to tell us. So, it was pretty devastating for him because he thought that we wouldn't look at him the same or we wouldn't want to hug him or kiss him. And, it was really a horrible time.
Well, how did the family take it? Because, there was a stigma. This is back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a stigma on that. Now today it's accepted as a disease more. But at that time it must have been hard for the family to deal with.
Well, it was hard because we didn't fully understand it. But he had a wonderful doctor, and the
right.
doctor really educated us on what to do and what not to do. So, we weren't afraid of him.
Right. Well, according to what I read, he contracted. He was arrested in '92, and for murder and racketeering. And then about 2 years later, he died from AIDS. Did you talk to your father to get a sense of what he felt about his life? Because there was so much turmoil, so much violence, and so much negative impact on the family. In terms of some of the things that went on. Did you have a chance to talk to him about his reflecting on his life?
You mean in the end?
Right,
before
he died.
It was very painful for me to go to the prison and see him because I knew I had to leave him in that condition. And it was hard to see him because he had no eye. And I didn't really go to the prison that much as I would have liked to.
Right.
But from what I understand from him is that he was really just worried about what we were going to do without him. Like,
right.
he really was focusing on that. I don't think he had dementia, he
well,
didn't
he had
really
dementia, too, on top of everything else.
Yeah, so he had dementia even during the war.
Yeah. Hey, Linda, a lot of people out there have a fascination and for mob funerals. When your dad died in June 4th, 1994, what was his funeral like? Can you describe that?
His funeral was really actually pretty quiet. People that he was associated with really didn't show up to his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that the mob life and the people associated with them, when the going gets rough, they get going.
So they all disappeared, right?
Yeah, and that's my view, and that's my opinion, you know, and that's what I've lived.
Right.
So when my father wasn't good for them anymore, you know, they weren't around anymore,
right.
So.
Yeah. Willie, let's take a quick break, and we'll get back to this really fascinating discussion here with Linda Scarpa.
Go Absolutely, ahead, a very intriguing interview and intriguing subject. You're listening to Crime Beat on the Artist First World Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and Will Harib. Our guest is Linda Scarpa, daughter of the Colombo family mobster Greg Scarpa. Now back to Ron and Linda for the remainder of the program.
Right. We're back with Linda Scarpa, and she was a star in I Married a Mobster, and we're talking about her life and her father, Greg Scarpa, the famous mobster. There was a lot of discussion in the news about what happened to your father's money, right? Because he had a lot of money, and no one seemed to know what happened to it, and that really had an impact on your lifestyle, right?
Yeah, that had a tremendous impact because we really don't know what happened to his money.
do you have a guesstimate of how much he had?
Well, from what we were told, he had millions. Well, we don't know where that money is. We certainly don't have it.
Right. It's not some offshore bank.
No, definitely not. But, you know, my father was the type of person to hide his money and bury it. So
right.
It could be anywhere.
Right. In your bag. Well, I mean, you really had to downsize. You and your mother, which we haven't really talked about, Linda Scarpa, you had to downsize your life, right, after that happened?
Well, you know, I'm a single mom right now. I take care of my children and my mother, and we're doing okay. You know, we live in a house. You know, it's not the lifestyle that we had then, but you know what?
Right.
As long as we're safe and we don't have to,
right,
you know, live that kind of fear, that's fine with me. You know, I'll take the trade off.
Right. When you say the people around your father disappeared, I guess they disappeared too for you, right? There was nobody there that was close to your father that came out and said, "Well, we got to help you and your mother."
No, there was no one around.
You're totally on your own. It was just like a whole new life starting for you, right?
Yeah, it was a whole new life, and you know what? It's actually better off because I really don't want it. I don't want any of their help. I'm the type of person. You know, I'm kind of like my father in the sense where I'm gonna do this on my own. I'm not going to ask anybody for anything.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, are you living with your mother?
Yeah. Well, yeah. We all live together.
Right. So there's you, your mother, and
my three little ones.
Well, you know, my money situation was tough after that. Did I marry a mobster have any impact financially? Did it sort of help you guys out? And how did you get started in that? Maybe you could talk about how you got involved with that.
Actually, what happened was my cousin had called me and told me about the show and asked me and my mother. Actually, he asked my mother if she wanted to do it. And really, the money was not really anything to speak about.
Right.
But we did it because we were told that the show was about getting our story out there and to be able to tell exactly what this life has done and what it does to people, you know,
right,
because people seem to love this life and glamorize it and idolize it, you know. I don't understand why.
Right. They do. I mean, people are fascinated by the mob, and they have this romantic image of the mob, and you know firsthand that's not true. So you did it because also... you did it. One of the reasons you did it was you wanted to show people that the life is something that's not to be glamorized, and that's something that that people that might get involved with it should shun because you have really painful consequences to face. Right.
I mean, that's really why I wanted to do the show.
Mm-hmm.
That was my intentions. I don't know if you saw my episode, but
yeah, I watched some of them. Yeah.
You know, I really spoke about the pain that it's brought to me, and you know, I can't lie. You know, when I was younger, when I didn't know any better, the life was great. You know, it had a lot of perks, and I lived a good life. I thought. You know, you think at the time you're living this great lifestyle, and people give you carte blanche and all the best restaurants and clubs, and you're driving around in the nicest cars. But at the end of the day, you're burying people you love. You're going to funerals. People are just disappearing out of your life. And, you know, for me, when I got that phone call that my brother was killed, my brother Joey was killed. I mean, that phone call was like the end of the world to me, because there's nothing in that life that is good. Nothing amounts good from that life.
Right.
What it amounts to is that phone call, and that phone call, getting that phone call is the most horrible thing that you could ever get. And there's a lot of families that got that phone call because of my father.
Right.
You know, I can't sit here and say, I'm a victim, my brother's a victim. We are, but there are also people out there that are victims of my father, and they got that phone call too. And I feel that pain also.
Right.
Well, for them.
How was the public? I know your show got good ratings, you know, and it was popular. How did the public react? Did people stop you in the street and say you really got a powerful message there?
You know, some people did. Some people recognized me, and some people that I haven't seen in 20 years that I ran into in stores seen me and said, "Wow, Linda, you know, we can't believe your life. We never, you know, we used to look up to you as kids, and you know, we look at you now at the story, and we say, wow, that life was terrible. You know, at the time, we didn't think that. You know, I think I did make an impact on some people. I hope I did.
Right on that. Where is the series now?
They're in a season two right now. I don't really know much about what's happening. I'm not in season two.
Right.
I'm actually going to be on the Biography Channel for this summer, a biography about my father for Mobsters.
When will that start?
I think that should be starting in the summer. I don't have a definitive date.
Right. Did you get a chance to meet some of the other women in the show, like Cheryl Caruso and Andrea Caruso, some of those other women that appeared?
Yeah,
did
I
did. Get to talk with them. Was that therapeutic, talking with these ladies that all, you know, they may not have had a tragic life as you, but they went through a lot of the same things.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm a little bit of a loner. I don't really speak too much to other people, and I don't look for therapy I don't look for that through other people. My mother's different than me. She does. Like, she tries to talk to other people. Like, she belongs to groups, and I just can't do that. I just keep things in. And that's another reason why I wanted to be on the show, because I felt like I needed to speak about what I went through and, you know, what happened to our life.
Right. Did being has being on the show changed your life? I mean, maybe not monetarily, but in other ways.
Not really, no. It didn't really change my life. I mean, the only thing that it changed was that I finally opened up to the world, the pain that I endured.
Right.
And, the pain, I feel like I lost my other half, you know, my brother that I'm supposed to share, you know, a whole bunch of my life with. I didn't get to share really much of anything with. And, you know, I held that in for a long time, and that was part of my interview. I felt like I didn't have the right to speak about my brother or have the right to grieve in front of people because of the pain that my father caused people.
Right.
You know, people would say, well, who cares about Linda because look at what her father did.
Right.
You know, so I really kept my pain to myself because my pain is my pain.
Right.
And I don't really want to be criticized. So, and you know, there's a lot of people that criticize. And I get it. I do. I get that. You know, I'm going to get people that are going to hate me regardless because I am Greg's daughter. And that's just the way it is.
Right. It seems like you've got a healthy attitude, you know, towards your past and towards, you know, the way you're going in life. And I think that's commendable.
I'm trying. I mean, I don't want to be hated. I don't want to be looked at as a person who's hated. But I know that it just goes with being his daughter, and there's nothing I can do about that. I can't make people like me, you know.
Right. What are you doing for a living? You obviously have to work and support yourself.
Well, I was selling. I'm in sales, so.
Is that wholesale beer? Are you still doing that?
Well, no, I'm not doing that right now. I actually had gotten sick this past year, so I'm on a disability right now, temporary.
Right.
So as soon as I get myself back to health, I'll go back to work.
Right. And you've thought a lot about your father, so our final question is really a fascinating discussion. You thought about your father. How do you feel about him today and his legacy?
Well, you know, I love my father. You know, I do love him. I don't like, I hate actually a lot of the things that he's done.
Right.
I don't condone any of those things that he's done. I can't make excuses for him. That was his life. Just like everybody who he was involved with, they chose the same life. So that was their life, you know.
Right.
I don't agree with it, but my father is my father, and he was always there for me, so I can't really
right.
beat him up,
right.
you know.
Well, thank you, Linda. We appreciate your being on the show and sharing your life. We're really looking forward to the autobiography, and when it comes out, please let us know and keep in touch with us. I enjoy our conversations.
Well.
We had a couple of conversations leading up to this interview. I enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, me too. And as soon as I get my book out there, I will be the first one to know.
Oh, great. Hey, we want an autograph, too.
Okay.
On that note. Thank you so much. Willie?
Well, thanks, Ronnie, and thank you again to our special guests, Linda Scarpa and Malcolm Kushner. We're delighted to have them on our program. Hey, Ronnie, what did you learn about our show tonight?
Man, we had a lot of pain in our show tonight,
I'm
right?
Telling
there was physical
you.
Pain with Malcolm. I mean, he almost got killed.
Oh,
he couldn't run driver. And Linda, you know, she had a lot of pain, but I think it's really good therapy for her to talk about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're both survivors in a different way, but it was a really interesting show. And I think she's a really strong, interesting, and nice lady.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. Well, you know what? I think Linda Scarpa is sure living a different life today, being the daughter of a mobster known as the Grim Reaper. It's not that flattering either, you know what?
Yeah.
I also learned that the mob can poke fun at itself through Malcolm's book. Even though gangster life is no laughing matter, you know, the
right.
reader of his book has a chance to have a chuckle at or two at the expense of these guys. Now, Ronnie, we're going to give you our gangster history lesson of the month. Dateline, May 1932, 70 years ago. Scarface Al Capone started his prison sentence for tax evasion. Big Al learned the hard way that there are some lines you shouldn't cross. Lie, cheat, steal, bribe, bootleg, murder, knock yourself out, dude, but you damn well better pay your taxes. Capone was released from prison in November 1939 after 7.5 years in the slammer. The repeal of the prohibition put a hurting on his business. Syphilis put a hurting on his brain. He died of cardiac arrest in 1947. Anything to add, Ronnie?
Yeah, and he went to Miami and spent the rest of his life after he got out of prison. I've got a book called Gangsters of Miami, and I have a really interesting chapter in there on Al Capone and what he did during the last part of his life in Miami. He
Great
was in
book.
Miami, by the way, while the St. Valentine's Day massacre was going on. That
right
was
on.
That was the alibi. Anyways, take it away, Willie.
Yeah, it was a great book. Good for you.
Yeah.
Now, just a reminder for all your listeners out there, our next program is scheduled for May the 17th. We'll have authors Mark Silverman and Scott Deitch, who wrote Rogue Mobster, a tell-all book about Silverman's life in the Boston mob. On the same program, we'll feature Patrick O'Connor, author of Scapegoat, we'll discuss California's Chino Hills murders and the framing of Kevin Cooper. In addition, a special guest appearance of former mob wife Linda Melito. It's going to be a great show, so make sure you mark it on your calendar. You won't want to miss this one, that's for sure. We hope you enjoyed Crime Beat this evening on the Artist First World Radio Network with Ron Chepsik and yours truly. For all of you out there, you can listen to our past Crime Beat programs anytime by going to the archive on the Artist First World Radio Network. Wherever you are, we would like to thank you out there for listening to our broadcast this evening. In the meantime, we welcome your emails and thoughts about our program. You can email us at crimebeat123@yahoo.com, and please spread the word about the program. And until next week, and on behalf of Ron Chepsik and myself, Will Harib, we hope you tune in to Crime Beat next Thursday, same time at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you want to have a front row seat to the fascinating world of crime. Have a pleasant evening, everybody. Good night, Ronnie.
Sleep tight, Willie.